Welcome to Soul Discovery with Kelly.
And Kelly.
Woohoo! We're back again.
There's more. There's so much more.
Kelly. Kelly had a great topic, and I don't know how much I'll be talking, but.
Well, yeah. You know, today we were filming some stuff for one of my students, some Bhagwan. And I had an epiphany because I've studied so many different Bhagwan systems. I've been lucky enough to study about like 5 or 6, whereas people generally only ever experience one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working on some of the Magui system for one of my students in the UK. And I realized that I had a sticking point in my awareness of not being able to understand the sequence, even though I've taught this sequence for literally years. And trying to replicate it on my own all of a sudden, for some reason, my brain just stuck and couldn't figure out a directional change. So I've got the muscle memory, and I can feel the muscle memory in me wanting to do something. And, you know, I've got my notes, and I've got, you know, my teacher wrote a manual, and I'm going through the manual, and I realized that I was dealing with a projection of my own onto myself of how complicated this palm change actually was.
Or how you thought it was.
Yes. How complicated I thought it was, and how I had convinced myself that it was more complicated, a lot more complicated than it actually turned out to be when I had finished figuring it out and we filmed it.
And I can say I always thought this one was complicated too.
Right.
When I was training it back in the day. I don't even really remember it anymore.
Right.
But.
And when I figured it out, I went, oh, this is actually a really short sequence.
Mm.
And I realized that I'd had this space in my awareness of this belief, this limited belief structure, this thought form that was convincing me that it was really complicated and hard to do. And I kept on going, yeah, but I've done it hundreds of times, if not thousands of times, and I've taught it for years. So what the heck is going on? Like, why is there this space in my awareness that is causing me to believe that it is more complicated than it really should be?
So while I was going through that whole experience of realizing that I had a story in my head of my own projection, my own story about how complicated this was, because before I learned Magui, I had a good 12 years of doing Zhang style and Yin Fu and Gao style. So, and I, you know, extensive background, but there was this one sticking point of moving beyond this story. And because my muscle memory basically carried me through when I'm working through relearning basically having to relearn it without the projection of the story, I realized how simple and straightforward it actually was. Because with a Bhagwa form, when you're doing the circles, you repeat the same form on both sides of the body to balance out the body and balance out the chi flow, balance out the conditioning of the fascia and tendons and ligaments and bones and all that. And I had to laugh at myself because it literally felt like someone was holding a balloon full of water over me and popped it, and the water splashed all over me and kind of like woke me up, and I went, oh, this isn't actually that complicated. And I realized that part of it was being around a lot of people who thought Bhagwa was complicated.
Mm.
And for a lot of people, this is something really brand new, especially when I was teaching at Jingwu. Bhagwa was brand new to their classes, brand new to a lot of people who joined my classes. And Magui is an interesting flavor of Yin Fu, or very Shaolin-esque movements, long sweeping arm movements and piercing palms. and a very subtle wrapping and coiling, very different than the Jong system that I had. And part of it was working through my own experience of, I think that I carried over from Jong style, where I was making Bagua more complicated, even after, you know, having taught Jong style Bagua for a number of years already. And learning a new system was like learning a new language. So I felt this space in me that was basically just this illusion that it was way more complicated and that I've been projecting it onto myself in order to also cope with people who didn't understand the system. To basically, oh yeah, this is like hard, this is really complicated. And that through teaching and repeating that and agreeing with people like how complicated it was, I had accepted the story that it was actually complicated just to fit in, because I understood already from learning Jong style, doing Yin Fu 64 palms and the Gao linear form, how difficult it can be to process the way you move in Bagua. And I realized I've been holding on to that for, gosh, I don't know, 10 years, learning the Magui system, teaching the Magui system. And after that, it was, you know, it was a threshold. And I realized it was a lot shorter and a lot simpler. And I could suddenly remember it really easily. And I didn't have that story. Like, it was literally like, it felt like a literal physical pressure on my head of this story. Like, it was a physical palpable feeling of pressure, someone pressing their palm onto my face, like, don't look. Like, literally, it was like that physical. And then it disappeared. I was like, oh, I could feel the release. I could feel the tension in my mind dissolve. And I suddenly had a brand new appreciation for the, you know, this palm change number 5. Great sequence, great turning sequences, and generating power from a very, very closed, compact space in the steps that you do both left and right on sides of the body. And I, you know, ever since then, I've been going, wow, you know, that was really, really subtle how I had pulled this story on myself to convince myself that this was actually harder than it really was, in order to fit in with the people that I was teaching, to make them feel okay.
Yeah.
Right? To make somebody else feel okay.
Well, and I think we do that. I mean, because people, and it goes both ways about, you know, if you have a teacher who finds something super easy, they'll project that at their students that it should be super easy for everyone.
Yeah.
And if somebody's actually having difficulty, then they're like, well, why is it hard for you? Because it should be easy, and they'll project it at you. And then it almost becomes harder because they're projecting at you rather than stepping back and observing and trying to teach it to you in a way that you understand. Mm-hmm. And that goes with like any sport, anything at school. Like, we have Ethan who's joining us here. Hello. And I'm sure that Ethan can relate to that with school.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just graduated.
Yeah. Any kind of learning environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
The information, yeah, like if a teacher goes, oh, you know, had trouble learning it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also one of the things, like, for my Bagua teacher, Andrea Falk, a legend in the martial arts, and her stories also of learning the Magui system and some of the politics that she had to go through, I realized had actually impacted me to the point where that was weighing on me as well. Because she'd gone from a Chong style, which is more flowy, less Shaolin-y style, to learning the Magui system and being, I guess she's a lineage holder of the Magui system as well, because she learned directly from the standard bearer.
Mm-hmm.
So all of her stories, learning from her and all of her stories, I realized had weighed down on me in terms of the desire to get the system right. So I was, you know, and when I first learned number 5, I was like, yeah, okay, this one's more complicated. It was basically the initial.
I remember being taught that too.
Yeah.
That, oh, this one's really hard.
Yeah.
Like, right? When we were taking class. Oh, this one's really hard. And I can remember, like, finding it a little bit difficult, too. Yeah. But isn't that's interesting, though, how we don't really understand, like, if we don't understand other people's stories, like, how other people's stories are actually projections in and of themselves.
Yeah.
And they do have an impact on us and our learning of something, because this is what another person believes. But they don't even know that they're projecting it. And you don't even know that they're projecting it, because it's not something they actively talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So you don't even know what you're being impacted by until you kind of just happenstance to figure that out on your own.
Yeah, and it's just like, one of the things that I understand from doing my own inner work for such a long time is like the weight behind the words of someone saying something super casual, the energy behind the words, the form, the jing of the E, the form of the intention behind the words, the energy that can be put into a simple sentence of, oh yeah, this is hard, can literally carry the entire weight of that person's learning experience. And we don't know that. And that was sort of one of the things when I had this like balloon pop, like it literally felt like something popped in my head. Like someone had popped a balloon in my head. And it was quite the revelation, because I could feel it. I could feel it so loud as completely changing my connection to this, to the fifth palm change. And suddenly it was so much easier to do it and remember it. And even when I gaffed on the one side, changing side, when I was trying to narrate and think about everything, and when we were filming it, and when I came back to it, I immediately knew what I'd done wrong.
Yeah,
I immediately saw what I was missing,
mm-hmm.
because I didn't have that story keeping me from understanding the form so clearly anymore.
Right.
So yeah, it's like other mm-hmm. people's stories. Like, we don't know the weight behind their words, right?
Yeah, but they do have an impact on us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important to, like, you know, let's take energy work or healers, because I made a couple of posts this past week on my social media channels, and one had to do with, you know, I made a statement outright that everybody wants to be a healer.
Yep.
Do you want to heal yourself, though? Because realize that you are the most important person, like, to actually clear yourself enough so that you are not projecting anything, that you are actively looking at and observing your stories and not projecting it at someone else, is a real gift to everyone on the planet, not mm-hmm. not just yourself,
mm-hmm.
but to everyone. But I have encountered quite a few people that, you know, call themselves healers who are like, well, I don't have any work to do. I don't have any more stories.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, okay. I don't know. Like,
well,
I'm always kind of like, I think you do. Everyone does. I mean, because I know that some of the things that I've realized that I have projected onto things are very subtle. Because the more work you do, you realize, because you go deeper and you spiral in, or go, like, not spiraling, you know, spiraling out of control or anything that. That's not what I'm talking about. But you go in and you find these little things that are like little whispers. Like I was telling my course instructor the other day that, you know, I could hear this story and this whisper, and I'm like, I know this is not my story. I know that I inherited this story from my mom.
Mm.
And I wanted to just stop the script, because I knew that it had impacted me, and I'm like, well, why is it coming back? And it usually will come back when I'm moving into a new place for myself. And that's where a lot of the, mm-hmm. you know, because we're talking really about like the projection and information, and people don't quite understand the information.
Yeah. Well, people don't think that their thoughts have any weight. They'll think mm-hmm. things. And I mean, this is actually something that is understood in Qigong and in the martial arts, that the intention, the energy that you put into a movement refines that movement and makes it more powerful. And this is why you want to train, like in Ten Animal Xing Yi, you want to train one movement, three movements over and over and over again, thousands and thousands of times, so it becomes so instinctive that if you actually need to use them, you can't be stopped. But it is not the action of doing that lends the energy to it. It is the focus of the intention. and the weight of the mind and the thoughts behind what you are doing that needs to be evaluated and observed. And you know, oftentimes this is why people do such poor jobs of communicating, because people are lazy with their words. They're lazy with their mind. They don't understand the weight that words can actually have, mm-hmm. because they don't think that words mean anything, except words carry energy. Everybody knows this. People just don't like to talk about it.
Well, and what one person says, you might not mean it that way, but how another person takes it. Yeah. And you can't worry about how someone else is going to take it. But that's where a real conversation comes in, is when someone says, stops you and says, oh, hey, what did you mean by what you just said? Mm-hmm. Because this is how that kind of made me feel. And okay, I can look at my trigger. That's fine. But is that what you meant? Because I'd like to know what you meant by that. And a lot of people are careless with their words.
Yep.
They're careless with what they say because they don't think, like, they don't observe. Well, and this is another thing, is that one thing that I'm learning is that we're not really taught to feel first. Like, before we act, and acting out can be a physical thing. It can be a word, like a conversation, that we're not taught to stop and feel first before we act.
Yeah.
We're so go, 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 to-do list, got to get things done. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then we feel how we feel later.
Yeah.
Instead of feeling first, like, how does this make me feel before I even do something?
Yeah, like, we'll push ourselves through experiences and then have to decompress afterwards because we didn't let ourselves feel our own motivation or the origin point of our motivation and why we decided to make a choice and express it the way that we did until like afterwards. And sometimes when people get triggered, it's hard to stop the upwell of emotional energy, especially if it's been pent up for such a long time. And like as we experienced yesterday,
when I got
triggered, then, because that was something that was completely unexpected.
Yeah.
Because of who triggered me and having been around that person before and not having that explosive or having that much anger or through a trigger or being triggered by them before, and then suddenly I was, and it was just like, what the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. So having to actually like sit and let myself feel through everything that happened.
Yeah.
And then to explain to you guys like afterwards, like, oh yeah, because there is like this fresh wound. I mean, it's, you know, that I'm sort of dealing with this past year, never mind, the weight of, taking care of my dad and everything else in my life that I haven't had space to process.
Yeah.
So, like yesterday, it's like I didn't, whatever space I was in yesterday, I woke up in pain and I was super tired. And this was obviously really close to the surface.
Yeah, to come out. Yeah.
To come out the way that it did. Guns a-blazing. I can laugh at it now because I was like, damn, like in the moment, I was just like, what the hell? Yeah, and like realizing, how some of my dad's own stoicness, like I was talking about this last night,
mm-hmm.
had like crept into, because I am very strong mentally and emotionally and yeah. spiritually.
Yeah, you are.
And realizing how some of my dad's own stoicness as a Mennonite had crept into it and how my shadow had wrapped it around this whole thing,
mm-hmm.
this whole wound, so that I didn't have to process it, or because I didn't have space to process it, this is what my ego or my mind was doing as a defense as a defense mechanism.
Yeah,
to quote unquote keep me safe from feeling the anger of this wound that I hadn't dealt with yet.
And I think that's where communication comes in. I think we should do another podcast on this about anger itself. Because everybody always wants to talk about anger as a mm-hmm. negative emotion, mm-hmm. but it's just an emotion.
Yeah.
But we often suppress it. And it is just a thing we're talking about. It's just information. It's just information.
And anger always happens when we have been cut off from ourselves.
Yeah.
When we have been unable to express ourselves and or, mm-hmm. well, express ourselves, cut off from ourselves. This is basically the same thing. And I mean, the wound that you know, that popped yesterday was something like long standing from like over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Where I've got like 20 years to decompress, and I've only just begun to sort of have a little bit of space to do some of that.
Well, and you have much more of the support to be able to do that now.
Like, oh yeah, which is probably, you know, it's just like
probably why it came out in the way that it did.
Yeah,
and also I've gotten to a place where it's like I don't take anything personally, and for me yesterday, what, you know, that's why it's so close to service for you is because you and I have actually moved into a true space of non-judgment, like more often. You know, I mean, there's still times where judgmental thoughts might creep up, and I always look at those because I think, oh, am I judging someone? Like, what am I, you know, what?
Yeah.
Am I thinking that? And it's good. You should, if you have those thoughts come up, is to question them. But I was able to spend a day with people yesterday that normally I would have either been annoyed or upset or, you know, at the situation or just wishing that people would change. I mean, how many times do we spend time with people and we hold out hope for them to change? We projected them that we want to change. We projected them that we want them to be different, especially people that we love.
Yep.
Right? We want them to be a certain way, and it's hard for us to accept them just as they are.
Yep.
Because especially when you go on this journey and you do this work, we want other people to do that too and to come with us. And then when they don't, we can be mad and upset. But you don't actually have to be like, when you can actually sit with them and kind of laugh and joke about a situation, even though it might be kind of serious, but, you know, you're just accepting of the situation. Like that was for me yesterday. It was from the moment I woke up in the morning. It was being very accepting of the situation and the day as it unfolded and not. And I spent the entire day that way. And I was very proud of myself that I actually spent an entire day. Like,
yeah. Oh, no, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
This can be a normal thing, but it does take practice because I just had to not, like, it was the first time that I hadn't felt any anger at all about a particular situation. So, and you know, one day we'll get more into the specifics of that, but not this podcast. But I'm sure, Ethan, I don't know if you have anything. You're just enjoying the conversation.
Yeah, I'm just enjoying listening to the conversation.
But I know, what was it like when you were going to school sometimes? Like some of the projections that you were on the receiving end of. Can you think of any of those?
Probably the biggest one that I've ever experienced was during our final project presentation. And I was doing so well at the beginning. I was doing so good. And then it was like my project partner's turn. And you know, this individual has a tough time speaking in front of people, which is totally okay. Like, you know, like he has a hard time doing it, and it was rough for him. But he has a very, very bad stutter when he starts to speak to people.
Oh, okay.
So he started to really, really stutter in front of people, like when he's presenting and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't good. Like, I'll be honest. But then when I started to speak again, it was really interesting feeling from him, like, this level of like jealousy that all of a sudden just like started washing over me. And then I started tripping up a little bit just because of just feeling from him of like him, you know, not being confident within himself.
With able to express himself.
Yeah. And I don't hold anything against him for that. Like obviously that's something that he's working through and trying to figure out, but it was just, to me, it was a really good learning opportunity to understand like how much other people's projections can affect, you know, you, right?
Right.
Like, and especially just even in the moment.
Well, even think about, you know, when we went to university and took exams and you go into the exam, you're nervous, and 100 other people are nervous with you.
Yeah.
And you try, like, you take you like 10 minutes just to like calm down and breathe.
Well, and try to stay in your own space. But meanwhile, there's all this other energy around you. And it takes a lot of energy and practice to not be affected by that. And I mean, how many people are affected by stress? Because stress is really an external thing that then affects our nervous system.
Yeah.
And it's the expectations of other people.
Yep.
And then we place those expectations on ourselves. Yep. And sometimes it's the expectations we have about from ourselves to do well that we then place. Like going back to your martial arts example too, when I first saw Bagua, I was like, you know, well, who am I to learn Like, I can remember pulling up and not being able to find a parking spot and going, oh, well, maybe the universe is telling me I should just go home. And then I found a parking spot. But then I went and I reminded myself, I'm like, you know, you were nervous to go to all these author conferences. I'm like, you're going to a martial arts class. You don't have to be the best. Nobody's expecting you to know what you're doing. Why are you putting so much pressure on yourself to actually know what you're doing? Go into the class. It's 1 hour of your life. And you know what? You don't have to come back.
There you go. Yeah,
and I really had to like pep talk my way through that, because at that point in my life, I was still really anxious about just, I had all these projections on myself from when I was a gymnast too. Like, well, I want to do well.
Right.
I want to do well. I have to do good. And it's like, why? This is something I'm doing for me.
Right.
I don't, like, why do I care so much? Where am I carrying those projections?
Yeah, that's a completely different story.
And then when you actually see those projections, that's information. Yeah. Like, it's just telling me that I'm still holding on to these stories. You can start letting them go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why I gave myself that pep talk. I'm like, just park the car. Walk yourself down the street. Open the door. Like, you know, step by step. And sometimes that's how you have to. When you're working through anxiety, a lot of people are anxious to try new things, but you literally have to walk yourself step by step through the process, whether it's getting your shoes on and going out the door, because we can stop ourselves from doing a lot of things because of our projections, or because other people don't want us to do stuff. So they're projecting. Mm-hmm. And the projection itself is just information.
Yeah. That's where like having discernment and awareness of the body really becomes essential, because a lot of people talk about spiritual evolution and they think it's just a matter of going through, you know, a ritualistic process with certain methods to elevate one's vibration or frequency. And what it boils down to is understanding how we communicate with ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and why we communicate the way that we do with ourselves, and understanding all the stories and all the origin points of those stories. You can do as many attunements and ceremonies and things with other people, but if you are not refining your awareness to understand the origin point of your stories and the motivation of those origin points of your stories and how your ego and shadow communicate with you and feed you those stories and the impact on your physical body and how your physical body holds all that information, then all the workshops in the world won't keep you from being stuck, because you're going to stay stuck if you aren't listening, if you aren't paying attention to your stories, if you aren't working at refining your emotional responsibility and listening to your body, because your body has all the information that you'll ever need in it. It's just, it takes practice to be able to go inside and to listen and to hear the information properly. So that's why it's like that whole experience of having that story of difficulty revealed to me with that one palm change was like a huge revelation. I was going, oh, wow, that's super subtle. How I had taken that on and projected it onto myself, because it was, you know, because I could feel the muscle memory. I could feel my body going, no, like this. I'm just like, all right. So instead of like trying to mentally analyze the manual, I just let my body speak for me. I let my body move me through the steps and the sequences of the fifth palm change. And I remembered it. And I was like, I literally remember the first time I got it. I went, wow, that wasn't actually so hard. Why did I think it was so hard? And then I felt that space of tension in my mind, of resistance to accepting that it could actually be easy. And then the bubble, you know, popped and it's like it dissolved. And then it was easy to remember it. And I'm just like, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Do you have anything else to add, Ethan? No,
I'm just listening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was something I was going to say, but now I don't know. I think you covered it.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Learning to listen to stories. Like every thought in our head that passes through our head has a story that it's connected to. And these are the tools. This is the language that we communicate with ourselves.
Well, I also think with spirituality, spiritual workers, light workers, we've kind of gone this route where everybody says and talks about it's all energy. Yeah. And yes, I said that with a bit of sarcasm.
Yeah.
It's all energy. And I'm like, yeah. But what kind?
Exactly.
What kind?
Yep.
Is it stuck?
Yep.
Where is it? Astral energy? Is it mental energy? Emotional energy?
Physical, spiritual?
Is it a physical blockage in your body?
Yep.
Because energies, like someone else's projections, actually affect you physically. Like when someone is projecting their anger at you, you can feel like you got hit in the stomach. Or if someone, quote unquote, disappoints you, or they trigger you to feel disappointed, you can feel a physical sensation. You know, I posted on our Legendary Living Arts page on Instagram, mm-hmm. this quote or this, you know, meme about tears, how tears are a physical manifestation of emotions.
Yep.
So if you don't express emotions, then that means they're still stuck in your body somewhere. So think about that. Like it's a physical thing. And I think that when everybody goes, oh, it's just energy, you're bypassing the body, which is your biggest tool.
That's right.
But people want to bypass it like it's not important.
Well, they don't want to do any real
work. It's the most important because is your, how you broadcast energy, how you receive energy.
Yep.
But people don't know what they're broadcasting or receiving. I'm saying this again.
Yep.
Because they're not clear.
Well, they're not physically aware.
They're not
connected to their physical reality. They're not. Mm-hmm. People talk about being in the moment. And they oftentimes, like literally 95% of the time when people talk about being in the moment, the way they talk about it, it is super clear that they're completely bypassing themselves and they don't want to do any real work, emotional, mental, and especially physical. Everybody wants to think that they can just sit and meditate themselves into nirvana. And we've had a real disservice done in terms of the Eastern traditions where they've been so diluted because a mm-hmm. lot of the Zen Buddhist training involved working in the fields, making food, having very specific physical experiences as ritualistic meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody just thinks, oh, you can just sit and meditate. It's like, no. That is literally like 1/10 or 1/20 of Zen Buddhism.
Yeah.
You had all the studies of all the different texts, but then you literally like half of it was having a physical practice. And for a lot of the Buddhist monks, it happened to be working in the fields, rice paddies, making food, working, doing something physical, working in the stables, working in mm-hmm. on the grounds, keeping the grounds clean, like something physical every single day. There is a whole session of...
Yeah, well, because also it's not just energy.
No.
Because if you could, every single cell in your body is listening to everything you say, everything. Every thought you think, every subconscious thing. There's a lot of things in people's subconscious that they're not even aware of that they're telling their body.
Oh, yeah.
And really doing this work, you want to bring the subconscious conscious so that you can go, oh, I don't need to think that way. I don't need to believe that. So imagine if every single cell in your body, you could control your cellular processes. That's energy.
Yeah.
And it would be amazing.
Yeah.
And that's to me why I don't understand when people are like, the body's not important. I'm like, oh, it's so important.
Every layer of energy. If you
can control, I just think that's
every layer of energy that people want to manipulate and interact with outside of the body in your auric field is actually connected to a layer of fascia inside the physical body. You cannot get away from the physical body being the key to spiritual development, awareness refinement, and literally every step along the way. How do you actually register the information? Your body registers it first, then your nervous system, then your mind. Your mind is actually like third or fourth in line to being aware. Your body is literally the first line of awareness that you have while you are alive in 3D.
And if you want to go beyond that, it's really about embodying frequencies, being strong enough to embody frequencies. And people often still talk about, well, God, it's out there.
Well, and this is the other thing that people don't understand. It's like,
out there, but in order to
actually embody the energy that they're talking about, they have to have a physically conditioned and strong body so that they can handle the influx of energy. If you cannot handle the influx of energy, you're going to disassociate and you're going to make up another story that is false, that you're going to have to unravel further down the road if you even become aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's also why thinking about projections, like people are also, you know, with the Schumann resonance going up or the eclipse energies, like there's so many like doom thingies. You're like, okay, people.
Well, and it's a clear example.
Yes, it affects your body, but how? And what are you trying to let go of so that you can actually
the eclipse clear that we just recently had, the solar eclipse, and all the hype and brouhaha around it is a clear example of how people's minds are completely and utterly fixated on everything except themselves. And everything external, and don't have an inkling of how to stay present physically and to be safe in their bodies, and which is really unfortunate because the world would be a completely different place if people were actually able to be present and safe in their physical bodies.
I agree. Any last words?
No, good. I'm like, got a lot to think.
I think you get a lot. Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, lots to think about right now. I think we're good. I think we're good there.
Well, thank you, everybody.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.